Hey guys, it's Daxton.
And Hayden from Blondies Out Loud.
And if you've ever thought about starting a podcast or making money from one,
we use Creator Lab from Odyssey for our show, and it's honestly been so easy.
It's free hosting, and it gives you a really simple way to earn on top of whatever you're already doing.
Which, of course, we love because it just adds another stream without the extra work.
So, if you're a creator or podcast curious,
check it out at creators.odyssey.com.
As always, you can listen to this show and all of our local shows in the Fan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Jake Vonnegut with you guys here on Overtime. Get a Grip coming your way in about 60 minutes, as it always does at 9 o'clock. But as we transition into a little bit of a slow period for the Browns, waiting for training camp to get going, still a lot of questions to be answered. And to help us out, following mandatory mini camp last week, let's head out to the Wise Heart Right, We Make It Right call, Kyle Wright Hotline. Find all of his work over on ESPN. Our good friend Daniel Oyafusi joining us now. Daniel, what's going on?
I'm doing good. How about you?
We're doing not too bad. It's been a lot of fun, I think, to watch a lot of what was going down in mandatory minicamp, see a lot of the battle happening. And Todd even loses his voice. I mean, we had a pretty exciting time, I would say.
No, most definitely. You know, obviously a lot of talk about the quarterback competition, which I know we'll get into. But yeah, I mean, you got a new head coach, a new staff, a lot of new players, a lot of young players. So it's definitely a fun time to be out there for the past couple of weeks and watch OTAs and minicamp.
So I have to ask you, because I've seen a lot of positive things about Todd and his practices and the way they've been run so far. How much of that, in your eyes, the positivity coming from it, is they are just so much different from what Kevin's practices were? Like, I mean, almost complete opposites. We're talking about no veteran rest days. When we get to training camp, we're talking about Todd interjecting in the middle of a play when things aren't going right. And how much of that is just, I mean, genuinely really well-run practices right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, there are some similarities. Like it, Kevin Stefanski was running an NFL, you know, practice. Like, it's not like he was running like a college level practice, high school level practice. But I think that what really stood out is, first off, just how much team drills they were doing. Like, you know, I've been here for 2 years now, and I know when I first arrived for spring and for training camp, like I was a bit surprised at like how little they had run, you know, a lot of team drills early on. And I know that you know, some of those teams were coming off a lot of injury riddled seasons, so Kevin was trying to play it you know, close to the vest and not, you know, have guys hurt entering the season. But Todd is making sure that this team is going to be ready for training camp and ready for the season in terms of trying to put them in as many game-like settings as possible. And then you just look at, you know, we notice how hands-on he is, you know, how vocal he is about stopping drills when they're not going the way he wants them to be done, and showing receivers, running backs, quarterbacks exactly how he wants things done. I think that part is probably the biggest switch up, like how hands-on he is in the moment, as opposed to maybe, you know, waiting until after practice to really correct things or stop things.
How would you say your perception has changed on him, if at all, from when you saw the fact that he was going to be hired to where we stand right now?
I wouldn't say the perception has changed at all. You know, when they brought him in, I think a big, you know, sticking point for the Browns and, you know, the higher ups was the fact that he was kind of that old school demanding style of head coach. And that was definitely, you know, a switch up that they thought that would be beneficial for what is going to be, you know, one of the youngest teams in the NFL, if not the youngest team in the NFL. But when you start to, you know, really see him up close and talk to him, and whether that be, you know, the on the record set after practice, or even, you know, throughout the course of the offseason, where we're at owners meetings and the comment and stuff like that, you really get to see the personality and like how genuine he is, how much he like really, really, you know, loves football, and how much he just loves the whole process of it. I think that's what really what kind of gets a light shined on over the past couple months.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the quarterback competition. Obviously, Shador versus Deshaun. We have a lot of reporting early to where we stand right now. How do you see it between how close this battle is and if anybody even has a slight edge at this point?
Yeah, I think it's pretty close. I think it's pretty dead even, you know, entering into training camp. I thought both of them, you know, had moments and things that you're kind of left optimistic about over the course of the spring with Deshaun. It's just the fact that he's healthy. And I'd say not even just the Achilles, but the shoulder surgery. Like, I asked him how healthy he was, you know, coming back now for the first time in, you know, over a year. It's the first time we had talked to him in over a year. And he had a really interesting comment that, like, okay, he came back from the Achilles, but he said that this was the first time that he had been 100% since week three of the Tennessee game, which would have been back in, you know, 2023, when he kind of messed up the shoulder. And then, you know, later on, he had the season ending surgery. So I think that that was like a positive. I thought that he looked more willing to push the ball downfield than he did, you know, the last time he played competitive football. And then if you're looking at Shador, I thought he was pretty steady throughout the entirety of the offseason workout program. Like, a big thing that a lot of the coaches have talked about was him improving his footwork, his process, you know, not holding on to the ball as much and playing within rhythm. And I think we saw a concerted effort from him doing that. But the thing is like, these are not real, like, game-like settings. Like, the pass rush is not there. I mean, the defensive linemen are kind of getting off their get-offs, and they're just kind of, like, standing there waiting for the pass to go out. So it's different when you put the pads on. There's a more lively pass rush, and I think that's why Todd Monken is kind of extending this into training camp, because he wants to see them in those kind of more physical settings, live settings, and then maybe even a preseason game to see, like, hey, how much of what we're seeing in these little practice sessions are really going to carry over into a real game?
So I think it's interesting because obviously, like, if I'm not out there at training camp, you see a lot of the highs and the low of the lows on social media of what ends up getting posted from everybody out there. So you see some of the great plays, and then we've seen both of the quarterbacks certainly make some not so great plays. We had the Mike Hall blocked pass for Shador. We had a bad interception to, I think it was Ronnie Hickman from Deshaun, especially in those last couple of days. What has the consistency looked like from that quarterback spot when you've been out there?
Well, I'll say this, like, I love the fact that we have as much access as we do, because, remember, the media, like, you want to see everything. You know, I wish I could watch all the practices, you know, during the season and be in the film room with them. But, you know, also having this much access during the spring, when it's really, like Andrew Weir has talked about, it's really like an installation and teaching period. You know, they're working on a lot of different things, trying things out. You know, it's a double-edged sword. Like, the highlights, like, the quarterbacks probably haven't been as good as every single highlight that we throw up there. And we're going to put them on social media because they're highlights. But they're also not as bad as, like, the lowlights that we see. Like, that happens. And I think, like, they're moving so fast and trying out so much stuff that I think a lot of times we lose a little bit of context because we don't know everything that they're working on. Like, Todd Monken even opened up to us about how they practice scramble drills. So if you see a quarterback holding the ball for, you know, 6 seconds on a video on social media, that might not be a bad thing. That might not mean they're being indecisive. That might be something that they're practicing. And at the same time, you know, just because you complete a pass means that, you know, it was the right read, or, you know, everything went, you did everything properly. So, you know, again, the access is great. The highlights are fun. You know, this is a time where we're not having real football, so any type of football we get is great. But, you know, we do have to provide a little bit of context and nuance. Like they're still practice. They're still working things out.
And again, Daniel Oyefusi with us here on the hotline. Right, obviously, as we got really into this early part of the offseason, we got a lot of reports that came out highlighting, you know, either Deshaun on the fast track, or Deshaun might have an edge, or the relationship between Todd and Deshaun. That is obviously, as we've seen it with our own two eyes, maybe gone away a little bit. Has Shador or Deshaun done anything to eliminate what that was? Or is a lot of that maybe just not coming out of the Browns building, and this has always been this close?
Yeah, I mean, from the beginning, I was told to just, like, let it play out. You know, I think that the natural thought was, you know, I think externally the natural thought was like, hey, Deshaun is a 9-year vet, you know, going into his 10th year. He's played in a lot of systems that are similar to what Todd Monken is installing. Just kind of like that veteran experience gives him the edge. But, like, this is a guy who hasn't played football in almost 2 years, and he's only played 19 games over the past, you know, what is it, 6 or so years. Like, it's been a while since he's played a full year. So, you know, from the jump, I was told, like, just let this play out, because, you know, you don't know what Shador was doing behind the scenes, and it turns out he was putting in a lot of work behind the scenes. And I think that part of the reason why we haven't got an announcement yet is on the starter, as much as maybe Deshaun hasn't, you know, blown them away, I think Shador really has made a lot of progress. Like, this was a guy that, you know, Andrew Berry called a work in progress at the end of his rookie year. And now, you know, at the end of the offseason workout program, he's saying that he's made tremendous strides. And I think that that's a real reason why we haven't had an announcement on the starter just yet.
You talked a little bit about Todd potentially letting this play out into, like, preseason when we see them game-like situations. With this being as close of a battle as it is heading into training camp, Would it almost feel weird at this point if we got a couple of weeks in and we ended up having the starting quarterback named before we get to those points?
Yeah, it does feel like it's going to get to the point where Todd's just going to want to see these guys in a real setting. Like, I almost think, like, what would make sense to me is, you do the first couple of weeks of training camp. First game, you know, Deshaun gets a half. Second game, you know, after joint practices with the Bills, Shador gets a half with, you know, most of the starters. And then after that, you know, you kind of take, you know, everything you have to evaluate them and you make a decision. And then you go into week three, the final week of the preseason, as your dress rehearsal and you name your starter. That seems like what would make sense to me. I don't know that if it's going to go that way, but it certainly seems like we're trending to at least seeing these guys in a preseason game or two before we get a decision.
All right, over the last week or so, obviously we've had the Brendan Sorsby entire process playing out. It's obviously still playing out in front of our eyes. It looks like he's going to play college football, but the NCAA is trying to stop that from happening. If he were to not be able to play college football, do you still believe the Browns would be serious about pursuing him?
I think that they would definitely look into it. I think Andrew Berry would definitely look into it. I mean, he said as much, and I know he spoke on the program a couple of days ago, and he made comments where he really, really seemed like he'd be willing to at least, you know, look into the situation and extend some grace to his situation. But then you have Todd Monken, who kind of was on the opposite side of the fence, saying that it's a slippery slope to draft him, and he's not sure that you could trust him being the franchise quarterback. I think that they would definitely look into it, but I also think that they might, you know, defer to how Todd's feeling about the quarterback situation, the quarterback room, and he said that he likes what they have right now. I think, you know, it's already a little muddled right now with Shador and Deshaun competing, and then you've got Dylan Gabriel still on the roster. You've got Taylen Green, who's a developmental guy, not to mention the questions that would, you know, come with Sorsby's eligibility, you know, in the NFL. Like, would he be subject to NFL punishment? I think that they would look into it, but probably pass on it in the end.
All right, let's take a look away from the quarterback spot. And again, Daniel Oyefusi with us here on the hotline. A lot of praise for Isaiah Bond throughout this entire preseason work that we've been getting so far. Good weight put on. I've heard a lot of stuff about his ability to catch the ball, his ability to run routes. Is he going to, in your estimation, have a big enough role on this team to actually flourish this year and show what he's worth?
Well, I think they definitely like what they've seen. I mean, I know even before the...
On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Draft. I was talking to people in the organization who were like, hey, he has another level he can reach. Like, he's not just a deep threat. And I think he showed that in the spring. I think this is going to be a team that runs a lot more 11 personnel, three wide receiver sets than they did under Kevin Stefanski. I don't know who the top three are going to be most of the time, but I do think that they're going to, you know, rotate that top four, being Jerry Jeudy, Denzel Boston, Casey Concepcion, and then Isaiah Bond being that fourth guy in whatever order it might be behind Jeudy. I think there definitely is going to be a role for him as a deep threat, as a guy who gets the ball in his hands quickly, and they're definitely going to find it because he's been deserving of it through his play.
What about the other young wide receivers? Denzel Boston, Casey Concepcion, we've obviously seen plenty of highlights out of both of them. They seem to be featured in the offense. If both of them stood out to you as, really good early on in their offseason work, or is one guy stood out more than the other?
Well, yeah, I think Denzel probably would have the edge over Casey just in terms of the highlight plays. Like, it seemed like every week, Denzel was coming down with the contested catch, jump ball down the field. But he also, like, impressed me with his ability to run routes fluidly at a bigger frame. Casey, you know, made his plays as well. I think that he's a guy that, like, once you get him in those joint settings or a preseason game where you can kind of see him, yards after catch and make guys miss, that's when he's really, really going to shine. But he's going to have a role too. They're going to get him the ball at all three levels of the field for sure. So both of those guys are inspiring a lot of confidence that, you know, whoever's behind center, they're going to have a much improved receiver room.
Let me ask you about the offensive line. Obviously, we haven't been able to see them work a ton. You talked about the defensive line and kind of their get-offs. But we have seen them mix up what the line looks like with the ones in any given day. How many of these spots right now do you think are solid, it's shored up, player and position, and then how many guys are in the mix for what's left?
Yeah, well, Munkin revealed that he thinks he has four starters locked in place, being the three veteran additions, which would be, you know, Tytus Howard, Zion Johnson, Elgton Jenkins, and then the fourth being Spencer Fano, the first-round pick, who's going to play left tackle. But I'd say three, like, actual positions are locked in, left tackle, left guard, and then I'd say right tackle. Now, you know, Munkin said earlier in the offseason that he ideally would like to put, you know, Elgton Jenkins at guard, where he was a Pro Bowler in Green Bay. But if they need, they'll play him at center. So obviously they were mixing and matching a bunch of guys at center and right guard. You know, I'm looking out to see, you know, what the fifth round pick Parker Brailsford does at center once they put the pads on, because he's an athletic guy but a smaller center. So, you know, when he gets in those, you know, more live settings, can he hold up size-wise and physicality-wise? I think that'd be a really interesting kind of subplot to training camp. And then if he doesn't, you know, kind of make that jump in training camp, I'm looking at probably Tevin Jenkins or Casey Leviston to be the right guard options while Elgton Jenkins stays at center.
All right, Daniel, always appreciate you setting aside the time. Good to talk to you. We appreciate the insight, and hopefully as we get closer to training camp, we'll be talking again sometime soon.
Most definitely, anytime.
Jake Bolnick with you guys here on Overtime. Just got done talking to Daniel Oyafusi, ESPN. If you missed it, it'll be up over on 92.3thefan.com. And of course, if you miss any moment in the show, use the Rewind feature on the Odyssey app, powered by Integrated Restoration, your local experts in water, fire, and storm disaster restoration. Really good stuff out of Daniel, obviously, coming off of minicamp and OTAs. A lot of questions surrounding the Browns as a whole. But I want to focus on some of the quarterback stuff, because I actually thought he gave a really good insight into what the quarterback battle is right now. And some of this stuff echoed from what we've heard previously, right? A close quarterback competition, genuinely seeing progress from Shedeur Sanders, a healthy Deshaun Watson, all a lot of positive stuff there. But there were two things that I thought that Daniel hit on that were very unique than what we've heard previously. And one comes from the Deshaun starting ahead of this race comparatively to where we are now. And Daniel basically laid it out that he thinks a lot of that probably came from the idea that, yes, Deshaun is a 10-year veteran. He has played in systems like this. He is expected to be the starter and the guy to take the lead in the job. And then obviously they've gotten on the field and it's looked a lot closer. And he attributed a lot of that to, one, Deshaun not having played football in a really long time. The reality is he's played 19 games over the last six or so years. So, I mean, do with that what you will. It was going to be difficult to look great coming onto the field when you just haven't played a ton of football. And then on top of it, a progress from Shedeur Sanders and taking a leap that we haven't been able to see previously. We've seen him in some of the install periods, but a lot of individual drills, just a little bit of the team action. And now that Shador's gotten a little comfortable, he's taken more of a lead with this. Or I guess more of an even approach, not necessarily a lead. That's not what Daniel said, but we've seen this thing draw a lot closer to even. And I think that's what so many of us expected probably ended up happening. But there was the idea floating around there on whether or not the Myles Garrett trade had anything to do with this, whether or not the Browns' philosophy on which quarterback they wanted to play had changed at all. And then obviously some comments about internal conversations with Deshaun and the organization. They sparked a lot of debate kind of going into all of this. But I think we have gotten a fairly, comprehensive answer into what the reality of the situation probably is. And again, it's kind of what I assumed it to be. But it makes sense now that you've seen Shedeur out there and competing a little bit more that it all adds up. And the other thing that Daniel really hit on that I liked is what I want to ask you guys at 216-474-0092. Does it almost feel weird if Todd names a quarterback too early? Because so much of what we heard out of him across the last couple of weeks was this thing's extending out longer than the initial, you know, guideline, whatever date he wanted to have put on it, which was to get to training camp with a quarterback named. But now Todd's talking about being able to see them play in football situations with the pads on. He talked a little bit about this idea that this could seep into preseason and into joint practices. And I think that makes you turn around and probably have more of a conversation. Like if Todd gets 2 or 3 weeks into training camp, right, pads go on starting right about week two. And at the end of that second week, he's like, oh, yeah, I got a quarterback. It's named. It's official. I know what guy's in front. I think I would take a step back and be like, wait, hold on. What happened to seeing them in pads? What happened to seeing them actually play legitimate football with everybody on the field? Like, yeah, playing against your own team is, you know, with the pads on, if you're taking the practices as such, it matters. I mean, it makes a difference being able to see those guys play, being able to see them take the field. That is different than what we just watched happen in mandatory minicamp. But it's still not seeing you in a full game-like setting either. That would make me feel a little weird. And I know that Todd, I'm sure ideally would like to have a quarterback named as soon as possible. But I think the date range that Daniel put is more of a likely scenario to him is probably where I stand on it as well, which probably makes more sense that you get a game or two games into the preseason, try to give Deshaun and Shador a half of football or close to a half of football, see how they perform. Give them the opportunities at the ones and use that following week, potentially the final week of preseason, is I've named a quarterback. Let's get into a dress rehearsal for the preseason game. Let's get all the ones out there, put them into a situation where they're playing this one. And you get at least a quarter of football, a half of football of here, the number ones are a go. Let's see them in their full action, full go, see what they can bring to the table. I don't think you can name a quarterback at this point. If you want to see them in pads, you want to see how they look against other teams and how they look in real football, you have to see joint practices take place and you have to see the preseason take place. That feels like the bottom line right now. I think it really goes for both guys. Like, for me, the bigger stepping point is Deshaun Watson. I've seen you look great in training camp, which I don't even know that you looked like in mandatory minicamp. I don't know that I can say, you know, oh, Deshaun looked fantastic. He looked like a new man. I saw some bad throws on the highlight tapes, or I guess the low light tapes. He made some good throws, and he was pushing the ball down the field to his credit. But I don't even know I saw old Deshaun out at training camp. And certainly the problem with Deshaun so far has not been what he's been able to do in, I mean, a helmet and shorts. It's been when you get into a game-like scenario, things seem to speed up on him. He doesn't look like he's able to process the field the same way, and he's looked uncomfortable. I need to see you play with pads on. I need to see you play against another team and see what that looks like. And then even for Shador, I still think it's a different game to say you've shown a ton of progress when you're running scramble drills and a lot of, when you're working on things in an installation period. That's different. And we talk about Shador as being a gamer, stepped up when the lights come on, and he's shown that. He's also shown that sometimes when the lights come on, you get to the big game, Shador's not playing like the game herself. I consistently point to that Chicago game of Shador did not look like a competent quarterback in that game. And you have the Tennessee game to reflect it on where he looked incredible, but I need to see Shador. What does progress actually look like when you're taking the field against another team? Those are the type of things that I point to. That, yeah, I mean, if you're telling me you had a quarterback and I'm ready to go and there's no questions about it, and then I get a quarterback named, you know, at that point I haven't even seen him take the field against somebody else, I'm going to feel odd about it. I'm going to feel like Todd shot the gun and didn't stick to his word on what he actually wanted to see. So I do think this is something that takes time, but based on the way Todd's talking about it, is something that should take time. But again, I want to hear from you guys. 216-474-0092. Does it feel weird if Todd names a quarterback too early? Let's go out to the phones. Ben is in Menor. What's going on, Ben?
What's up, Jake? Yeah, I got a few things. I do think it would feel weird now. I think you at least got to wait till joint practices. I think those will tell you more than, honestly, preseason games, because those are one-on-ones that really hit and trying to prove a point. And then secondly, is Deshaun or...
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
Deshaun had to lead at the start, everyone says, because he's a veteran, blah, 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 like you just said. Is Shador playing, like, significantly, so he has to play significantly better to even it up, or is he playing the same and that actually doesn't matter? And then one last point, especially, like, when they're talking in the media, Andrew Berry, like, he kind of glances over talking about Deshaun. Do you think that's a little premeditated because he knows it's just going to come with a bunch of backlash and that he's kind of, cuts it short when talking about him, and then he finally gets to talk about a quarterback, and Shador just gets all the positive because of that, or is he significantly playing better?
So based on what I've heard, and Ben, I appreciate the call, to both your points, so when it comes to the media part with Andrew Berry, I think it's hard to talk about a lot of things you've seen out of Deshaun because step number one was for him to get healthy. And he looks healthy right now, but, I mean, you're still battling back from injury. You still haven't been on the field a lot, and I don't think that everything I've heard, Deshaun has looked incredible. I think he's had a good day or two, especially like the end of OTAs and minicamp is what I'm talking about. He had good days earlier in that when it was like, I mean, we're talking about voluntary OTAs and things of that nature where there's less team drills. But I think most of that has been you haven't been able to see a ton from Deshaun, and you didn't really know what to expect. Whereas Shador, it was clearly, here's what we saw at the end of last year, here's what you have the product, and he's clearly made progression. Like, Deshaun, how much progress can you make while you're rehabbing from three injuries? I don't know how much that is. So I don't necessarily think it's a glance over on Deshaun. I think it's just more, you also know what you expect from him, even if he's healthy, and he is healthy, so you expect what you've seen out of him for the last 10 years. And then to the other point, I do think this is them playing relatively close. Like, I don't think this is Shador making up the gap by playing a lot better than Deshaun at this point. I think that's these guys both coming out, and it was an assumption. Deshaun was going to look better, look like he had a better grasp on the offense, and then Shador has kind of evened the playing field. Not necessarily him playing significantly better than Deshaun and closing the gap, just both the quarterbacks kind of look more like they're in the same spot. All right, real quick, let's go back out to the phones. Larry's in Cleveland. What's going on, Larry?
Hey, I'd like to say, man, thank you. So I'd like to say, man, I hope Deshaun come better, man, compared to 4 years we've been dealing with this mess, because he's supposed to produce quick, because, man, we put a lot of incentives in him, and then he's supposed to be the facilitator. Well, we had a great – we had an all right team, especially when Miles there. Man, we lost the goal, a threat, man, and most of all, man, Barry, he knew that he was going to trade Miles – months ago. Why didn't he get Reese another threat? Because we know we need two pressures now, because we ain't got no threat now. I mean, the young man is good, but he's not great. But most of all, man, we need some hungry young men. Deshaun got to – somebody got to show their reliability, their credibility. Simple, man. They got to get hot quick, not 1 year. They got to do it the preseason game. Show some leadership, and have them players, man. They got to have a players meeting without the coaches, all this, because it's important, because they got to build the same channel in order to win quick today, because we deserve it. Cleveland, man, the Browns, man, we got a lot of challenges where we can make it, but they got it, man. It's up to Deshaun Watson and Shador to carry this team, because, man, they got to click quick and win quick. And, man, because offense could click the defense, or defense got to click the offense, because, man, we lost the GOAT, one of the best players we had in the NFL, Myles Garrett.
I got you, Larry. I got you. We're up against it, but I got to run. I appreciate the call. Did I just hear a players-only meeting being called for in June? Is that what I
don't know
did
what's I get going on?
I don't know what I just missed. I mean, listen, I like somebody to take some leadership if that was the main sticking point. I also would say, yes, Jared versus not Miles Garrett, I would still put him in like the category of, I mean, good to great. He's selected back-to-back Pro Bowls in not reigning, but just beyond reigning defensive rookie of the year. I would say he's really good. I mean, yeah, they got to show some leadership. The offense has got to step up. But I don't know who else. Listen, if you were looking for somebody else, replacing Miles Garrett with Jared Verse is about as good as you're doing. And I was right on the other side. Would I look somebody who's more potent of a pass rusher? Sure. But I think he's also still a pretty good pass rusher and just fine. I also do think that. All right, let's leave that there. When we come on back, talks about Donovan maybe not signing that extension, just yet. And what could come from the Cavs this offseason? It's coming your way in 5 minutes. Again, right here on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan. Jake Volnick with you guys here on Overtime. Get a grip coming your way at 9 o'clock. That Cavs conversation we were talking about, maybe a little bit later in the show, because we have some interesting news coming across from Pete Thamel that right now... Star quarterback Brennan Sorsby, who obviously has been going through a lot, has been granted the eligibility. to play by Texas Tech, but now is fighting battles with the NCAA, trying to stop that motion, fighting battles with the Big 12, now going after Texas Tech and Brendan Sorsby. And all of a sudden is now applying to enter the NFL supplemental draft. So can we just start? Number one, what in the hell did we just fight for? Like, listen, maybe the NCAA was about to win this and Brendan Sorsby, maybe that'll come out here at some point. But he's supposed to get a 2-game suspension that was going to be against, what, Abilene Christian and Oregon State, I think, and then be able to play. That is what he got a judge to rule on. Obviously, this was going farther. The NCAA was asking essentially for this to be expedited to not allow Brendan Sorsby to play, to have this pushed up in the courts to actually get something happening. And now I'm sitting here just getting the fact, I'm just going to enter the supplemental draft anyway. What did I just witness for the entire portion of this to actually happen, that now it's just, well, got all that, just wanted to show I could win, make the NCAA a little better. Now let's just get to the NFL and get a what is very possibly an NFL suspension done and over with. But this obviously means more than just in the Sorsby state of things, because Andrew Berry is on record talking about him, as is Todd Monken. But Andrew Berry, even on the station on Friday when he was on with The Morning with Daryl and Anthony, jumped on and talked about what he sees in Brendan Sorsby if the Browns would actually be interested.
I really asked two questions. I asked, number one, is this a bad person or did they make a bad decision? And then the second piece is like, okay, what are they doing after the fact, whether it's really where it's to correct the behavior? Like, is this a pattern of decision making? And if so, have they done something to stop the pattern, or is this an isolated incident? Because the reality of it is, like, we're all going to screw up, and some certainly mistakes are greater in magnitude than others. You know, the most important thing, you know, in Brendan's case is like what he does from here. Obviously, it's a great first step to get the help that he needs. But then it's like, what is around him? What is he doing to make sure that, like, he can maintain healthy habits moving forward? And so it seems like it's a very good start there. Obviously, I don't know all the details at this point, you know, within society, so to speak. I think we could all stand to use a little bit more grace.
Well, that sounds to me like a guy who you're at least doing your due diligence. You're going to look into it. And I'm sure coming up here very shortly, Andrew Berry plans on having those answers. If, you know, Brendan Sorsby being what we're getting right now, the fact that he is going to enter the NFL supplemental draft is definitely, we're going to find this out. Andrew Berry, I should say in particular, is going to find out whether or not Brendan Sorsby does have the right things around him, if he is taking extra steps beyond getting the help he needs. But this just feels like an oddity. And I'm going to call back. Daniel Ufusi was on with us at 8 o'clock, and I asked him about this. And he talked about the way he saw it is that the Browns would probably look into this further, but ultimately end up on the answer of no. And a lot of that stemming from what Todd Monken had to say at the Browns charity golf outing that we've played several times for you. Todd talked about the difficulties of adding him in and that he wouldn't do it, right? That there's too much on the plate there. He's got too many things going for him, and emphasized him and Andrew are two different people, and Andrew's not going to see that same way eye to eye. I think at this point, I have a lot of questions as to what's actually happening, because the supplemental draft expected to take place sometime here in the next month. And I mean next month, not in the next 30 days. I mean sometime next month it's going to happen. I just don't really know what you're solving. In the quarterback battle here, just doesn't feel like somebody that I'm willing to take on at this point. Again, with everything that you have set up this season, I guess it stems back to what the supplemental draft pick actually is going to cost you. If you can get him for a fourth round pick, I'd say take the swing. But if the expectation that he could go for as high as a second round supplemental pick, I couldn't tell you to get away faster. That's just not worth the time of day. That is not worth committing, you know, the next several years of your future in at least 2027 to the idea that I'm not going after another quarterback. That's the guy that's going to be in the room in, again, very possibly facing a suspension this year from the NFL. Who knows of what length? And even when he comes back, likely not being your starter this season, you're going to develop him for a full year and just hope that it works out. And by the way, bypass, in the process, every other quarterback that is on the market in 2027. why you would put all of your chips into that basket, that I don't understand. And I mean, Andrew's, I mean, very clearly been on the record about players with a spotty history or a spotty past. And I think points to it right there. Just this idea that even though we've seen Andrew go after, I mean, good character after good character in the last couple of drafts, right? He has really hit on the idea that they are going for good character pieces, guys that they can have around them. To then maybe what Andrew actually believes in is that when you have those good characters set up, when you have so many good guys in the building, you can bring in somebody who might be a little bit more problematic, somebody who's had a spotty past, a spotty history, and then I can bring in and, I mean, mitigate that. And we've seen other teams have this situation go on with them. Like, I mean, the Eagles are notorious for this. Bring in guys who don't have the best past, have things in their history, and then I've surrounded them with guys like Fletcher Cox. I've surrounded them with a bunch of players who are dedicated to the game, who have a clean past, who are great leaders that are going to keep you in line, and they've made it work. Andrew Berry has yet to do the make it work part. Again, I think you've brought in really good players, but those are not veterans at this point. Those are very young players. I just don't think you can take the risk on Brennan Sorsby being the guy that works out and, again, committing your future to him. If he really does cost a second-round pick, if that's what it takes in July and you have to give up the 2027 second, you can't afford to go down that road. You have to keep your options open for the Dante Moores, the Arch Mannings of the world, instead of bypassing those to go with a guy that, one, I think, just being blatantly honest with it, is worse than them. I mean, I don't think he was probably bypassing the Mannings, the Moores, at least the top couple quarterbacks in this draft that you might very well have an opportunity to go take and do it for just not knowing the product that you're getting, not knowing the person that you're getting. I don't know that I feel comfortable with the $90,000 in bets that you've put down across your collegiate career and then going and getting help when the situation comes to light. And I think this is the one position where you talk about, oh, we got a guy with the spotty past, the spotty history, and you can make it work because you surround him with great guys. Quarterback might not be that spot. Like, those are the guys that you can't go after. Considering the guy that's currently in the room and fighting for a quarterback spot that was brought here a few years ago, clearly didn't work out. I mean, in all fairness, it wasn't anything off the field that has caused those issues. It has been just a lack of on-the-field play, a lack of being able to be on the field. But that has not worked out in your favor. So many of the guys that Andrew Berry has brought in, like, for every positive that you see with like a Kareem Hunt who was here and didn't have problems off the field and was productive on the field, it feels like I have three or four more guys that Andrew Berry has gone out and tried to make work that have just fallen short of that. Again, why at the quarterback spot am I willing to risk that? It's obviously big. It obviously changes the Browns' approach in the supplemental draft. It puts them in this conversation. And I don't have a problem if the Browns actually go out and submit a bid, right? Put something out there. Say, offer up the fourth-round supplemental pick. But I wouldn't be going much, if any, higher than that. Maybe I'd consider a third. Maybe, but probably not. Like, fourth is kind of the cap out. I'm imagining a team like Pittsburgh, who is desperate and probably not going to have an opportunity to draft a quarterback next year, is probably going to put in a bid that is a second or a third-round pick. I imagine there might be another team or two around the league, whether that be the Jets putting in a competitive offer, whether that be the Dolphins putting in a competitive offer, the Cardinals, somebody's going to go out and take the risk to say, yeah, let's just bypass that. And I just named three teams who are very likely to have a very high pick in the 2027 class, so maybe that deters them away from it. Maybe that stops them. But why you want to go down this road? And again, how in the world we even got here doesn't make any sense to me. What happened with Brennan Sorsby that all of a sudden we're in the supplemental pick now? We want to earn the supplemental draft now. It feels like you were fighting so hard to stay in college for the immediate turnaround. That doesn't scream positives to me. That doesn't scream good things. If you wanted so badly to go back, have the chance to repair your image, and you are granted it by a judge, why you make that sudden switch of heart and that change of mind, I think draws just as many questions as everything you've done before. 216-474-0092. Texas Tech quarterback Brennan Sorsby planning to enter the NFL supplemental draft. Is that actually something you're interested in? Plus, we got Get a Grip coming here in just a little bit on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade! gone nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, mine starts here.